This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
And you're tuned in to Pressing Matters, the show that seeks to get behind the news. This morning, we welcome Sharon Tan, freelance journalist, but has recently written for the New York Times. Good morning, Sharon, and welcome to the program.
Good morning. You've got a lovely new office here.
That's right. And yes, I'm Tan Chung Han. With me, Joyce Goh. So now, Sharon, you have certainly done your rounds in the print media scene, right? Formerly with Malaysian Insight, The Edge, The Star, The Sun. Talk to us about your transition, right, from having that security of getting that regular monthly paycheck to freelance. Why freelance?
I think at this point, I wanted to, didn't want to be fenced by time, and I wanted to do my own things. So, yeah, so I took the plunge, but it was very scary, though. I think the first few months, there was a lot of anxiety, not seeing a regular paycheck coming in at a certain time of the month, and then during the first part of the year, the first 3 months, there was no job. So that was very, very anxious moment for me. Yeah.
So here you are a few months later, justified decision though, or having doubts here?
There's still doubts, you know, on and off. Like, am I doing the right thing or not? But I'm enjoying myself. I'm doing some stories that I never thought I would do. Mm-hmm. So I think it has justified.
Yeah, Sharon, could you talk to us about what are the pros and cons of freelancing versus belonging to an organization? Because, for example, you were in Malaysian Insight. Previously, you were with The Edge for about 5 years, The Star for 5 years, Sun for 3 years. You know, if you add up everything, you were in the media industry for over a decade and all this time working for an employer with a monthly paycheck. Now you're in freelancing. So what are the pros and cons?
I think I get to do some passion project that I want to do. Very important. I think I could control my time a little bit. Last year I started doing a lot of walks in the evening. So, you know, that mattered a lot to me. So I just wanted to have time to do things like that. And I was helping out a few students at UM with their, what do you call that, master's degree, their thesis. So that gave me time to spend time with them, you know, as a sounding board. So, yeah.
Right, okay. So what does that say about the state of the print media here in Malaysia, right? Because if you need to actually leave the industry to pursue these passion projects, I mean, is the idea that it's just overly restrictive? Because the last time you were here on this show, on Pressing Matters, you came to speak about Kembongnomics. And that is not your typical fare when it comes to the print media, right? So I would have thought, judging by the previous episode, that you are still able to pursue these passion projects via these established print platforms. Or am I misreading this here?
The Malaysian Insight is not a print media.
Online. Yeah. Sorry.
No. I think...
I mean text. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
I think, you know, to be fair, the print media, you know, they have their bosses to answer to. So they do what they... you know, need to do. I left for my own reasons. It has nothing to do with the state of affair where the media was going. I just needed some time for myself.
Okay. So the freelance industry for media personnel, right? If they want to jump into freelance, how do you reach out to, I don't know, in your case, you managed to land jobs with New York Times. So tell us, how did that come about?
That was also very interesting. I think this was just about exiting TMI, and then two friends asked me if I wanted to fix for New York Times. Then I was like, ha, and then I said, okay, I'll do it since I've never fixed before. So
what's fixed? Could you? It's a journal lingo.
Industry lingo.
So okay, you tell us what's
okay. Fixed is like connecting the person with people here. You know, they need to do interview with certain people. So I do research who they should speak to and all that. So yeah, so I took on that gig and it grew from there. I enjoy it actually.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, is this leading to perhaps more content for the New York Times?
I've been doing steady job for them since November last
nice.
Year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So then, you know, and going back to something you mentioned earlier with your interactions with the UM students then, okay, given your career trajectory, what do you tell them though? Do you still tell these kids like, hey, yeah, come into the profession, there's still jobs aplenty? Or how are you shaping their expectation when it comes to the industry?
Okay. The kids, the students that I work with, are not, what do you call that, journalism students. Oh. They are master students who were doing papers on GLCs.
Oh,
okay.
So that was my area of interest and specialty while I was a journalist.
Okay, but well, but the question remains then, because again, you've got experience, well over a decade in the industry here, right? Now, what do you tell aspiring journalists, again, drawing on your experiences?
Well, I've told friends, children who wants to be a journalist, it's like, don't expect to make money lah.
Tell us about it. Yeah.
Because pay in the industry is not great. Maybe the wires pay better, but generally the industry don't pay as well. So yeah, it's not about the pay. If you want to come into this industry, it's really about the passion.
Okay. Would you encourage aspiring journalists to start off their careers with an organization or do it solo first? Or do you think they need that experience?
To an organization. Yeah, you need that experience. Mm. Yeah.
And what can you bring? As part of an organization, as a news in a newsroom, what can they learn from that as compared to doing it solo?
I think with the newsroom, you will have a lot of support. Yeah. To start off, you will need contacts and all that. That's how you build your contacts through the newsroom. You get sent out and then you get sent to assignment and all that. That's where you build your contacts. Whereas on your own, you may not have that wide field to play with. In a newsroom, they could move you from general news to crime to, different beats, which is great. I mean, I've done different beats, so, it was great for my career.
Right, but the criticism right now for the SOPs in media outlets right now is that they are always like one, two steps behind, right? They're not ahead of the curve. So, for these aspiring journalists right now, is still being attached to a traditional media organization still the way to go? I mean, as opposed to, look, you've got plenty of avenues right now to get your work out there, online, social media, etc. Isn't it ripe for disruption? Or do you think that tried and tested path there, that's still the way to go?
I still think a newsroom is the way to go, personally, because I have benefited working with editors who, they were great mentors. So I've learned so much from them rather than going out there on my own and, without direction. I think mentoring is very important in a newsroom.
That is true. Yeah, how they teach you what to look out for, what's newsy, what's the lead, how to interview. Yeah, I guess all these like journalism 101, you can't actually learn it by theory. You need to practice it. Is that what you're saying, Sharon?
Yeah,
yeah. That's right. So practical. Sharon, can you drop some names then, for those listening out there who might consider a career in this industry? Whose articles, whose blogs should they start reading right now? Do you have... nothing. Well, I mean, I see, like from the past, or even just things where publishings that really provide good content. Can you recommend? What's your reading list?
Oh, yeah. The Edge. Okay, every morning ritual. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's The Edge, The Star, The Malay Mail online, The Malaysian Insight online, CNN. Washington Post,
everything, yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Cool. All right. Well, we gotta take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll dive deeper into some of your more recent stories, starting with the one in New York Times. We're speaking to Sharon Tan, freelance journalist, right here on Pressing Matters on BFM 89.9. Stay tuned. Thanks for sticking with us here on BFM 89.9. I'm Tan Chung Han. With me, Joyce Goh, and you're listening to Pressing Matters, the show that seeks to get behind the news. And this morning, we have Sharon Tan, who is a freelance journalist now, but has written for the New York Times, Malaysian Insight, Edge, Star, The Sun. She's done her time in the local industry here. All right, so Sharon, let's dive deeper into your latest piece for the New York Times.
Yeah, you wrote a couple of pieces. I think one that struck out to us was the one on the child bride,
right.
11 and married Malaysian spouse over an age-old practice. What I found interesting was how this article was angled. It focused on the guy's his daughter's friend, because IU is his daughter's friend. They were best friends. I think it started out like that. So I think that was a good lead up to it's a different angle to that story. How did you guys go about this story, and how long did it take for you to finish the story?
Okay. Okay, the story came about because, you know, Malaysia is always seen as a very modern and moderate Muslim country. So suddenly you have a child bride. So it's really jarring, yeah? So the editor contacted, say that wanted a story. So so I was really sick at that time, but managed to get some contacts in Kelantan. And then the other writer, Hannah, flew in and she went on a trip with them to meet all these people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't manage to go on that trip because I was really, really sick.
So this is an example of fixing where like a foreign press would like to write an article on a, let's say in Malaysia, for an article here based in Malaysia, they reach out to fixers.
Right.
And that's where you connect them with local people.
And then I gave them like the background story, the nuances and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. How did you find... So for this child bride story, because you're by lines there as a contributor, another story where you contributed to is also this China story. We cannot afford this. Malaysia pushes back against China's vision. This is by Hannah Beach, but you got the contributing journalist mentioned in this story.
Right.
So could you tell us a bit about this Chinese... this story on China and the investment and how long... to take to write this, and you know, for because you went to the ground, right?
Yes, we travel to Kuantan, Malacca, and Johor to look at all these places, and we spoke to many people. It took a while to write the story because I think they function on a very different timeline than us. It wasn't like a important, you know, it wasn't like breaking news kind of timeline. So we did this in April, just before the election. And then the story didn't come out till about like 2 weeks ago. Yeah.
Right. So compare your contributions to these two pieces for the New York Times versus your decade plus worth of work with local media outlets. You know, what can we learn from them? How are their editorial stances or the shaping of these angles different or perhaps even superior compared to us? At least there's a perception, right? That,
yeah, there's always the perception. So like the China story, it was looking through the One Belt, One Road angle.
Mm.
It's like how we all fall into that perfect location for One Belt, One Road. So it was not something that I kind of thought of, but when you see it on the map, then it's like, oh, it makes so much sense that how important Malaysia is in that equation.
Right. I mean, do you get a lot of guidance from the New York Times editorial board or did they just kind of let you do your own thing?
They will let me know what they need and I work on that.
Okay, so why do you think they're so interested? Is it because of the whole new Malaysia after what happened May 9th, suddenly Malaysia's on the map? Or do you think even prior to that already there was interest in Malaysia and these kind of Asian topics?
I think there's more interest now. After May 9, Malaysia has always been very seen as a very stable country in the Southeast Asia. And then we're not like Myanmar, you know, with the Rohingya problem or Philippines with the war on drugs. You know, we are very stable, almost maybe boring. But now with this May 9, things are shaping up to be very interesting for them to see where we're heading. You know, we change a government after 60 years, you know, without bloodshed. And then Dr. M is back in business. So, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, that may be true for the domestic context, but what about for their international readers? Because we understand that, you know, when it comes to how stories, domestic stories are represented to an international audience, they often rely on, you know, shorthands, right? The stereotypes, you know, what's common to the narrative out there. Do you think that there's perhaps a bit more work to be done on that front, you know, changing how Malaysia is represented out there to the international audience?
I think that's where the role of contributors like me and fixers come in, yeah? Whenever the reporter flies in, you know, it is us that help to tell them, you know, shape that story, yeah?
Mm.
And, you know, change that perception a little bit. I think that's how it is.
So what do you think what do you think is a glaring misconception out there that needs to be rectified ASAP? Anything comes to mind?
No, nothing comes to mind right now.
All right.
Yeah, well, Sharon, do you know earlier we were saying like what when they come here to Malaysia and you're trying to in a way change their frame the mindset for them because they're coming in with a different mindset for some of them. How many of them are that open though, or are they straight away? Oh no, you know I know better.
No, I think I've been very lucky to work with people who are very open minded. Yeah, who would they would when I tell them. They would like, okay, yeah, now I see it, yeah, you know. I think most recently we had a conversation on the LGBT issue. They also had a certain mindset. Then I said, no, there is a lot of other things at play here.
Yeah, so what was their mindset like?
No, they're just wondering, you know, whether why, you know, the LGBT community, you know, were like kind of oppressed and all that, you know, what's the government doing and all that. So, yeah.
But again, that's using that liberal lens, right?
Yes.
As opposed to saying using a conservative lens. Is there room for that kind of narrative in the New York Times?
I don't think it's fair for me to say that on their behalf, yeah?
Sharon, do you think that in this for this issue for LGBT, do you think the issue was represented and reported fairly? By you know, when they come here, they're trying to understand. They are trying to understand, right? It's not straight away they come in with a preconceived notion, oh, you know, we don't understand what's happening in LGBT. It should be this way. In your experience, do you think they were a lot more open to understand the local culture and how the locals take on this matter?
Okay. To be fair, New York Times has not written about this yet.
Mm-hmm. But from your experience with other from what you hear?
I think there is a certain... I think they try to be as fair, but sometimes I think they miss some nuances.
Yeah.
Such as?
I think there are a lot of things that, you know, only a local would understand. And when you write it, when a local writes it, it's very different. Yeah, because you understand the background of things.
And this is why a fixer is important when it comes to foreign press coming in or having a fixer.
I think it is very important. Yeah.
And in that way, coming back to your freelancing work, are there challenges when it comes to income sustainability, though? Because you might have like a gig with New York Times, but that could be like one article a month. And I mean, Malaysia could be the hot flavor of the month right now. But who knows? You know, a couple of months down the line, we could be back to a small market in their whole global lens.
I miss my paycheck. There's still a lot of anxiety, but I think I've been very lucky compared to some of my colleagues out there who has, you know, didn't get their payment for months or even years. So I've been quite lucky in that sense, but it's something that I have to continue to work on. Yeah.
Okay, that could be a positive spin, right? So that could be impetus, added drive for you to go and chase that next story. Are you seeing those opportunities? Are you allowed to be proactive in that sense? Go out there, chase a story, write it down, then offer it to New York Times or any other platform, as opposed to the current status quo whereby they prompt you for what stories you want.
I think that's very possible. Yeah, it's just that I have not worked on it myself, yeah? But I think they are very open to things. Yeah.
But also for freelancers, like in your case, this China story, you have the advantage of time, right? Because this story that I've read, you know, it looks like you must need a lot of time to do the groundwork. Could you tell us what goes behind the scenes?
Okay, they wanted the story and then they called me and then it was within days they came and then I got everybody in line to meet with and to travel with. So it was within like 5 days we went to all those places. And it was back and forth, calling everybody, canceled. There was a lot of canceled appointments and then you had to find other people to come on board.
Okay, so with the little time that we have left here, Sharon, final question. So sum it up for us again, your transition from regularly paid journalist to freelance, pros, cons, you know, talk to us about the experience, 30 seconds.
Very, very scary, but very fulfilling. I've got to do things that I've never thought I would be able to. And the journey continues, yeah.
Yeah, indeed, the journey continues for Sharon Tan, freelance journalist, and the broadcast continues for BFM 89.9. Coming up, we've got the 10 a.m. news bulletin, and after that, Enterprise. I'm Tan Chung Han. With me, Joyce Goh. Thank you so much. Stay tuned right here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.